Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter and a broker here at StoneX. I focus on the grain and oil seeds, but my group here, we also have experts in the energy markets, dairy, interest rates, currencies, plastics, whole bunch of anything where we have exposure to commodity markets. So if you have any questions for me or my group, please feel to reach out at 312-706-7610, or you can email me directly at craig.turner@stonex.com. Also, if you like the podcast, please give us a positive review on iTunes. And if you want to check out the newsletter, you go to turnerstake.com. For clients, if you have any questions, you can always contact me by phone or email, but you should also have my cell phone, and you can call or text. All right, so let's get into it. It's been a busy couple of weeks. I've been in and out of the office on vacation and some work trips and stuff like that. But we are back at it here, and I'm going to be in the office for a while now, probably up until late fall. So let's talk macroeconomics first. We're seeing the stock market and the economy overall seem to. Maybe there is not going to be this recession everyone was expecting, or the recession is really just an economic slowdown, kind of a stagflation period instead. It doesn't seem like there's going to be a hard landing. And then number two, as far as a soft landing, we may just be able to get through these next 6 to 9 months without actually having a negative GDP for two quarters in a row, which would be the technical definition for recession. Personally, I think we had one last year, but I don't know if that ever actually got officially classified as one. But what's interesting is inflation is coming down. Latest CPI reports had inflation at 3% year over year. That is exactly what the Fed wants to see. And if the inflation can stay that way, the Fed can keep interest rates at 5%. 5.25%, because if inflation can somehow just hang around that 3% area, now real interest rates are 2%, which is the Fed funds rate minus the, let's call it the CPI inflation rate. And I think the Fed would be comfortable with that. Even if they inched it up a little bit, like they don't have to go past 6, and as long as inflation can stay where it is. There does in the economic reports. The one thing that really pops out at you or pops out at me every time is just the inflation that there is due to shortage of labor. And I'm not exactly sure how the United States figures that out with more people retiring out of the workforce, you know, the boomers, and then, you know, having the, you know, for the jobs and the skills, especially now that this economy is. Seems like it's getting more specialty skill as time goes on with the workforce. I'm not too sure what that means here with cost of labor and who's going to be available. So we'll see how that turns out. But that does seem to be the one sticking point here, which means to me, it's kind of steady as she goes. There's no reason to think that we're going to have some big economic collapse. I don't see us having some kind of huge economic growth either, but it does seem we're just going to plod along here, and so will the rest of the world. The one concern will be China, it looks like. They still have some pretty nasty, not nasty, they have subpar economic numbers, and I think there is a little bit of a risk for China to have deflationary price pressures in their economy, just looking at some of these latest reports, but you never really know what to make of them either. So we'll see what's going on there. But Chinese demand for agricultural products is especially from the United States, is going to be a concern here. All right, so looks like energy is finally rebounding. Crude oil, the United States will start buying for the SPR now that driving season's pretty much over. OPEC has been cutting a lot just so they can support crude in the 70s. And if we're not going to have this recession, we start getting some economic growth. It doesn't have to be a lot, just an improvement. Energy prices can be stable and even going higher. The big risk to the upside is if the economy really starts going here in the United States and across the world, and then all of a sudden we could be looking at much, you know, sharply higher energy prices, especially on the crude oil and the RBOB and heating oil side. But that remains to be seen. The natural gas market seems to be a twos and $3 traded market here until something changes. But honestly, the weather has been fairly mild, especially last winter. We'll see what happens here in Europe. But natural gas is plentiful. We do have plenty of supply to meet demand, and there's no reason to think that's going to change anytime soon. Where the problem is in the energy market for petroleum is we just don't drill for crude oil anymore. We don't update our infrastructure for refinery into heating oil and RBOB and other refined products for crude. And that's going to be a problem just on a capacity and utilization issue. But we'll see how that plays out, maybe playing out later this year and into early 2024. Finally, let's go on over to what we really want to talk about here is the grain and oil seed markets. So since we last talked, we had the WASD come out and they incorporated the new acreage numbers, 94 million acres corn, 92 million acre soybean. We also saw a breakdown of ending stocks by class and production by class for new crop wheat, which was new from July. And let's just dive into that. Then we'll talk about the weather and some of the stuff going in Ukraine. What the WASD in July basically set up for everyone is the fact that soybeans are going to be tight for another year. That's the number one takeaway in that WASD report. When you have 83.5 million acres, which a lot of people are arguing, you know, that was USDA was too drastic. Maybe they were, but for right now, we gotta just take it at face value. 83.5 million acres, that gives us about 82.5 harvested at a 52 yield, which is trend line. I'm not exactly buying a trend line yield at the moment, but let's just say we're 52 on the yield. And if we have a crush of 2.3 billion and exports of about 1.9 and a half, we basically have an ending stocks of 166. That's tight. That's going to be tight for a whole other year here. And that's with a 52 yield. Now the USDA really, what they ended up doing is when they brought down the acres and basically the yield, they brought down exports also. So the crush stayed kind of the same, but they were able to basically increase old crop carrying a little bit, which helps out the new crop. They were also able to reduce exports to 1.8 billion, which, by the way, is 130 less than this year and about 300 million less than 2023-22, which is possible, but the ending stocks of 300 is really banking on a very big and robust and exportable South American crop, which may be the case. But at the moment, I'd be very surprised if we're at a 300 million carryout on soybeans on a 52 yield and 83.5 million acres. Personally, I think we're probably closer to a 51 or a 50 yield. And I think ending stocks have to be sub 200 just based on the weather, and maybe that acreage is a little low, but we'll see. I also think that if exports at 1.85 comes in, if South America if indeed South America and particularly Brazil can really ramp up exports and meet that capacity, which is certainly possible. So the big takeaway for me is soybeans are going to be tight. We're in the 13s right now in new crop. Let's remind everyone, new crop soybeans eventually becomes old crop soybeans. I want to say we're actually 14 right now. I'm sorry, we're $14 in new crop soybeans. New crop eventually becomes old crop, and 13 and $14 new crop soybeans usually means $15 old crop soybeans until we know more about South American weather. And if South America, I mean, if South America production really is big, we have record acres and everything comes in great, then yeah, then exports can come down 1.8, 1.7, 1.6, which by the way doesn't completely kill the ending stocks. I think what it eventually means is we just the crush goes up here in the United States for the soy oil and the renewable biodiesel. I think what really is the loser in this big scenario could be soybean meal if we don't find an export market for it, which we could. I mean, if we're going to be exporting less soybeans, maybe the United States can figure out a way to either use more wheat or export more soybean meal. But that is that is what I was my main takeaway here is we're going to be bullish or at least elevated in soybeans for a while here, at least until the winter. Soybean oil is most likely a value in the 50s when it's trading there. Just taking a look at biofuels are going to continue to increase according to the USDA. Soybean oil since over the past 2 years, back in 21, 22, we used about 10.5 million, about 10.5 billion pounds of soybean oil for biofuels. That's increasing to 12.5. So 20% increase. That's just going to keep on getting bigger. And that's gonna be supportive of the bean oil market. The concern is going to be meal. And what do we do with this meal if we're crushing for oil? So that could be a laggard. So that was the big takeaway on soybeans. We're going to be elevated here for a while. On the corn market, when I take a look at the WASDE for corn here, 94 million acres, I mean, a 177 yield. We got 2.2 billion on the carryout, but if we go to 173, we're still at 1.8. If we're 170, we're 1.5. And this is based on just normal demand for the USDA. When we go back and take a look at, let me take a look here. When we go back and take a look at maybe lower demand, and that's why the funds got so short in April and really turned on a dime in the grain market, especially corn, drove prices down, is there is this assumption that the feed number is too high and the export number is too high. And if that's the case, then corn ending stocks may could be still adequate with a 167 yield, if those demand numbers are right. At the moment, the USDA has exports for corn at 2.1 billion, which seems optimistic. They've got feed, where they got the feed and residual at 5.6 billion. I don't know, we'll see. And then they have, we have ending stocks at about 2.2 billion. Next couple weeks are really going to be crucial for the corn market here. The southern half of the United States, in the Midwest, and also the Southeast. I mean, Southeast corn is very good. The corn that, down in the Delta and where we got rain in Illinois and Iowa looks good. In the next 2 to 3 weeks, certainly count to see what's going to happen there. I mean, you probably take a lot of these areas can take a week or so of heat. I don't know if they're going to be able to take 2 or 3 weeks of heat with no rain. The forecast did get a little bit better for in the 10 to 14 day today, but still going to be hot. And we're going to get some heat here at the end of July. And that's going to definitely stress the crop. There's always this question, how good are these hybrids? How good are the farming practices? Or at least what are the results, after basically the money that's put into it, on the chemical and fertilizer side and everything else. If corn is 170 or higher, we'll have adequate supplies. And if the demand is low, it could be 167. And I think that's why corn is still in the low to mid fives. And even on all this heat, it's not going to, it's struggling to break much above 550 because we're still not that tight in the balance sheet. There is an effect of wheat being tight and soybeans being tight, which kind of carries corn higher a little bit. And the seed technology is very good. And also, we're getting late in the game here. It's July 21st. Yes, as we go north into the northern part of the belt and into the northern plains, there's a lot of corn at risk. There's a lot of corn that's been made, though, in the United States so far, too. And that kind of tempers what's going on. When after looking at, okay, and finally on the wheat, let's talk about wheat for a minute here. Got my WASDE report out in front of me. Wheat by class is what we want. My big takeaway on the wheat side is Chicago wheat was tighter than I thought it would be. Kansas City came down, but not as much as I had kind of feared. And when I take a look at, you know, hard red winter wheat year over year, ending stocks have come down, but not as much as I thought. The exports, we are going to export about 30, 35 million less, and stock to usage definitely tightens for sure. But that's not dire. There's still going to be enough for food, and maybe the exports are going to have to come down. But not a ton. On the hard red spring wheat side, ending stocks do decrease a little bit. We do see exports come down a little bit. USDA is still counting on a pretty good crop here on spring wheat, which will be good because the United States is an exporter, not as big as an exporter as Canada is, which are having weather problems, but they are. We'll talk about Canada in a second here. And then soft red winter wheat. There is going to be an increase of exports. It looks like the exports we lose in the Kansas City wheat are going to be transferred over into soft red winter wheat, or at least that kind of a bump. We are going to have higher production. We're going to have higher production in that Chicago wheat contract. I think that Durham's going to get tighter, and it looks like white wheat's going to get tighter. When you add it all up, wheat's tight for another year, and we need to keep these acres high, which maybe. And that we're going to have be priced high for that. And I think what we're going to see here is acres kind of stay the same or start to build for wheat. And it's going to have to take it from either beans or corn. Most likely it's corn, just looking at the carryout. It's a long time away to start talking about next year's planting mix. And South America will have a lot to do with that too. But the wheat market's tight. And it's going to be tight for at least another year. And what's going on in the Ukraine doesn't help. So talk about weather in Canada. Canada's hot and dry. Canada's going to be probably hot and dry for the next 2 weeks. Forecasts in the overnight run were a little bit wetter in a lot of places in North America, but we're still going to see some pretty good heat here between now and the end of August. And we won't see any kind of material chances for rain through large spots of the Western Prairies and the Midwest and Northern Plains until we get into that first week of August. At least that's what the latest models I saw. They change all the time. I think there's some real concern of if it does stay hot and dry and we get no rain here, there will be losses in spring wheat in Canada. And in canola, I've heard people, we were going to have like a 20 million metric ton canola crop. And now the bulls are talking about sub 17. And that now has price rationing. And we've seen canola rally from basically the high 600s to the low 800s on the exchange. And rightfully so. We were basically up until about 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, the canola market was transitioning from a tight market into an adequate / abundant market. And with this heat wave and these conditions, we're going back to tight. Now, not as tight as we were back in, the drought of 2021, but enough to justify at the moment 800 where these prices are on the board. And canola at 800 a ton, let's just call it, I think we're about 825. 825 divided by 44. It's about, man, that's about 1850, 1875 a bushel. Looking a lot better than the $15 a bushel that they had. And that's in Canadian dollars, even just a few weeks ago. Spring wheat, like, now here's the thing with spring wheat. There is going to be a good amount of production in Europe. There is a surplus right now in the European Union. And also, you know, who also produces just a ton of spring wheat is Russia. And I think we're going to add on, we're going to add this conversation with the Black Sea. So Russia has been targeting Ukraine. It's the fourth day in a row now they've been bombing. And it look, you know, Ukraine is able to export about 40 million metric tons of grain and oil seed. Now, it's nowhere near their peak and what they could do, but they can get enough going either through Romania, Danube River, and into Europe to at least to provide enough grain and oil seeds where we don't have a humanitarian crisis. But it does mean we stay elevated. And the wheat market is really where this comes into play. The wheat market is much more important than corn, soybeans, and oil seeds. You always got to remember about corn and oil seeds is those are feed and energy markets also. I mean, and also too, while vegetable oil for cooking is important, you can always put something over a fire and grill it. It's important, but it's not as important as wheat, rice, and maize for human consumption, because those are the cheapest and most basic calories for the developing world. And I think, you know, if you take a look at it, I want to say for the developing nations, maybe it's like 40% wheat, 40% rice, 20% maize, something like that in terms of like the cheapest, most accessible calories in a lot of the developing world. And, you know, Asia, I think like Asia makes up like 90% of the rice, like the rice imports that go into Asia, rice that's imported around the world. I want to say 90% of it goes into Asia or something like that. So it's something crazy. But wheat is, you know, if it's not Asia, then a lot of times wheat is that basic used for calories in a human diet, especially around developing nations. And it's going to keep there. We will keep that premium in the market here. So I have a feeling Russia is trying to basically take out the terminals, prove to the West that they need Russia, and Russia will have the upper hand in supplying the rest of the developing nations with wheat to avoid a humanitarian crisis that they created. I think that's going to be their negotiating. It's a very cynical way to look at it, but at this point on over, it seems like the most logical way of what they're aiming at. So I'll be surprised. The only way I think wheat goes through 10 bucks here is if we just get all out war in the Black, a naval war in the Black Sea where they're sinking ships, which could happen. But I think what's likely is Russia wants to cripple the ports, go back to the UN and the world and say, you have to use us for exports. And, you know, we're going to negotiate to get back into the SWIFT system and a whole bunch of other things. So we'll see. That's just my gut feeling here. So that is going to be the podcast for the week. A couple of things here. Energy is looking more bullish, especially on the petroleum side. Corn looks bearish as long as the crop isn't severely damaged over the next couple of weeks. Soybeans are going to be tight between now and the winter, and we're going to see a big crop planted in South America, but you got to plant it and you got to grow it. And until then, premium deserves to be in the soybean market, and same with the wheat. Wheat could be a multi-year issue here with Russia and Ukraine and just trying to eventually get back up to speed with these operations. So wheat elevated, corn deserves to be the most elevated until South America comes around, and soybeans deserves to be in the 13s, 14s, and when it comes old crop, maybe even 15s until South America can grow what they plan on doing. And corn looks the most bearish to me here. So that is it for the podcast. I know it was a long one. I appreciate everyone listening. If you have any questions, please reach out to me. Again, my number is 312-706-7610. Craig.Turner@StoneX.com is my email, and all the contact information is in the show notes. Hope everyone had a great week, and I'll talk to you soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.